24th of August, 1964. You're Mr. Miyazawa, and that's spelled
M-I-Y-A-Z-A-W-A.
And what's your first name?
H-A-C-A-E.
And let's see, you were president of the Camp and Mill Workers Union between 1923 and 1930?
The Camden mill workers were mainly in the timber, in the lumber mills, weren't they? Was this organized strictly as a union, or did it come out of an earlier Japanese organization?
Before 23?
Yeah, 1920. First organized meeting.
Of the union?
Yeah. January 1st. I remember that date.
No, it was for everybody. It weren't just mill workers.
Mostly mill workers. No, not limited.
Not limited to, apparently.
But mostly. That's the people from Sonson Bay, they were struck over there. And they come up in Vancouver and they think better organize the labor union. See? That's just that first.
When did you affiliate with the Trades and Labor Council?
1927, I think.
Not till 27.
1927.
How you were well organized all through and before that, though. Did you have any sort of agreements with the employers, or were you?
No, I don't think so. No.
Purely
no.
A back room.
Just a back room. Yes, I think so.
As near as I can gather, Tom did that about it. They never had any formal agreements or anything, but it was an organization to collectively, I suppose, vent their grievances with the company on the hope that something would be done. I guess this is about the way it was, wasn't it? Yeah.
That's the main thing, we started organized unions. That means that there is a very strong anti-Asiatic movement. Well, that Mr. Benghoff is that time the secretary, and he is the secretary anti-Asiatic leagues. And at times, but says every week she pamphlets out. I remember that. And that time, anti-Asiatic leagues members over 60,000, that says. Also, we Japanese have no organized union, and can't get in the union at all.
Yeah, there was a bargain membership in the Trades Union Council, I think, at that time. There was exclusion, and so I guess this is a result of this. They banded themselves together.
What were the relations between you and the on the job?
Well, not corporate, but the wages is cheaper wages. The companies pay less wages for Japanese. That means the white people say the cheaper rivers. That means we think it's a. That's only way to organize them, the labor union and apply to the Trade and Labor Council. That is the reason to start the organized union.
Well, it's the old story of you can't beat them, join them. And this was, a vehicle where they would, as somewhat, at least, talking to Dad years about this, that they formed it to soften campaign put on by the anti-Asiatic group by getting into the labor movement, or at least trying to affiliate, even in a very second-class citizen basis. I think this is the
thing. Was there another union? Was there another union at the time that maybe that in the same plant?
Was there another union in the industry at that time?
That time was
the
I don't know exactly, but another union is the OBU at that time, big union, one big union movement in Vancouver.
So was the one big movement as anti-Asiatic, as the trades and labor movement?
Yes.
Was it the same, they were anti-Asiatic too then, the OBU?
The OBU, no.
No, they weren't.
They were.
Just a moment, let's get it straight. Were they or were they not?
They were not, eh? The OBU wasn't that the Asiatic.
No, no.
But the Toronto Labour Council. They were.
Yeah, they were.
Did the OBU try to organize the Japanese workers?
I guess so, but I don't know exactly. I'm not sure, but.
You weren't in it?
No. But we think, you see, that the OBU is a little bit more radical people's. The movement, see? So...
I believe the union in the other union in with you would be the shingle weavers.
I don't know.
There were some laws, but I don't know.
Let's see, let's get on to how this thing got organized. Who started?
Yeah, you mentioned the strike.
Yeah.
That where was the strike? What was it about?
At Sonson Bay Summer. Sonson Bay Lumber Mill. I don't know what the strike is start the first, but I don't know how they. No, that's. I'm not really sure, see.
Well, then, in when you joined up with the TLC and the Vancouver Council in 27.
Yeah.
Now, this is one of the things I can't understand. Why, when the Vancouver Labour Council was so anti-Asiatic, did they let a wholly Asiatic union into the organization?
Did you people apply?
Yeah, they applied.
The Vancouver workers union
applied. Yeah, applied through the Mr. Lefort, he woke us.
Well, Wally Lefort was quite active around that
time. Yeah, he knew very well, I think.
And I think, as near as I can gather, he was the one that did the negotiating on behalf of to get them in.
Because in the minutes, it doesn't seem as if there's any great opposition.
Oh, I see.
To the affiliation. And it's one thing I couldn't understand.
Uh-huh.
I'll have to go see Mr. LaFon about it too.
Have you talked to him on the phone?
Well, not very much.
Well, how, after you affiliated, how closely did you work with the other unions?
Well, that's a whole work that everything to the secretary doing, so I don't know very well. Mr. Minsky, you know that.
Oh, Minsky, eh?
Mm-hmm. He was.
Yeah, he was the secretary of the group, wasn't he? Probably, they probably set up where the secretary did probably most of the work. He's at present the Japanese editor of the New Canadian that's published in Toronto. And I think perhaps on some of these questions, if you set the question out particularly, that he would be able to answer them much better than Dan. Thinking back now, you know, that I'm talking about, Dan and I haven't discussed it in years. But the last while we haven't talked about it at all. Mm. But he would probably know it. In fact, even to myself, it seemed a little fuzzy. What real role did they play, if any? I know for a fact that they never they never entered into negotiations or signed collective agreements as we know them today, but they did, as near as I can gather, that one of the main purposes was to try and soften the anti-Asiatic fever that was fairly rampant at that time, and by affiliating with the labor, Trade and Labor Congress, even on a very loose basis, at least was better than being left outside, so to speak, with no voice at all. This is about the role it played here.
There was another big strike about
19 later, but in the 28-29. Yeah, about the number, I think. Yes,
Oh,
that's Ocean's
Forest. And as I remember it, the whole Japanese came out in support.
Yeah.
Did you get much support in that from the Labor Council?
I don't know. I guess so.
You didn't work very closely with them then, I take it.
It wasn't too closely. I doubt very much.
Not too close myself.
Were you the council delegates at all during any of these years? The delegates of the Bank of Labor Council? Or the trades of them?
I'm busy myself, see, so I didn't go much.
Your union ran a newspaper.
Yes.
And there was some question of about setting up a cooperative store.
Yes.
When the Japanese businessmen wouldn't patronize. Mm. Now, how big an operation was this? How successful was it? How long did it last?
The co-op?
I don't know how long, but
didn't they run up to the war time?
No, I guess not.
Oh.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
I think it ran right up to the First, Second World War. On one basis or another.
Yeah.
Go back to me.
Mm-hmm.
It was running up until the war time.
Yeah, that's right.
It was a consumer co-op, I suppose.
How big an operation was it?
Big in terms of people, dollars, or what?
Well, in terms of how important.
How important was it in the community?
Oh, not
very
much, I think.
I don't think it was that had. I can recall at the store now, thinking back, you know, when I was a kid, but in terms of how much business it did or how important it was, down there on Powell Street, along with the other Japanese businesses.
Not very much.
Not a large segment, no.
Did it achieve the objective of forcing the other stores to deal?
With the paper?
With the paper and with the union.
Oh.
The other stores quit the advertising.
Yeah.
Yeah, they did. But they didn't come back.
Yeah, they
did.
They did come back
yeah, after.
Yeah.
So it did achieve its purpose.
Uh-huh. To some extent. Just how far is pretty difficult to gauge, I suppose. There was two Japanese papers at that time, the Union paper.
There was three, is that?
Three?
Yeah.
There was the other paper, wasn't there?
Let me see. At times, three. Yeah.
It was the Minshew, the Continental Times, and.
Three daily papers with the Indian papers. Four.
How radical was the Union? Did it have political overtones?
No, but our Union is not radical.
I don't think the paper was radical. I would guess, knowing who was involved, you know, at the time, or we would term it practically all social democrats, I suppose.
Yeah, that's right.
And they were, amongst the Japanese community, they thought they were rather radical.
Yeah. All the other Japanese is call us the communal, something like that.
But they bank didn't think so.
This breeze is pretty soft. That's only, I told you first time, that's only we want the making smooth between white and Japanese. The Japanese, the workers, 99% is all workers in Japanese. That's why we must good friends between the union, the Labor Council people.
Well, one of the reasons I ask is that when the leader of the Japanese Labor Party, Workers' Party,
mm-hmm.
came to Canada, he was feted by the Labor Council.
Mm-hmm.
And I assumed that he would have been a Social Democrat or a mm-hmm. left of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder just to what extent,
mm-hmm.
To how closely the mill workers would have been to the sort of this position.
Oh, to the position of the guy coming from Japan?
Yeah, the leader of
the Labor Party. Can you remember that?
Well, sometimes, yeah, I guess we unions are over here, see? I don't want any connection with all country parties.
Okay.
I think it's fairly recent, that picture, isn't it?
29.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mr.
Bengal
for
that's right.
Mr. Nevans and...
You say he was secretary of the Asiatic Exclusion Day.
Yeah. After we joined the Mr. Bingham's very good. We have all kinds, see? And things all bring up to me, see?
Yeah, this is what it seems like to me. The moment the mill workers got in, there was no talk about really against it.
Uh-huh. Actually, in a sense, in retrospect, it accomplished its major purpose in at least cutting down the organized opposition, right?
But even so, despite this, in 1929, the Canadian Labour Party split over this very issue of giving the vote to the Japanese and Chinese.
What did it happen? Where are
this? Do you remember this?
This is in 24, or was it 29?
I'm sorry.
I think it was earlier.
It was 26. It was 26. It again came to an issue in the 33 election.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
What was the feeling in the labor movement at that time, around 33? Had it softened a great deal?
The attitude towards Asiatic workers?
Oh.
You think the attitude changed?
Yeah, I don't think much. We joined the Trade and Labor Council, that's only labor's voice, not against any Japanese movement. Anyway, that's after print, the council, the things are overturned, it's pretty good. Nothing trouble at all.
Were you able to get your wages up anywhere near the level of the white
people? No, I guess not. Yeah, after we joined there, but the one example is the Ocean Force, the paper union, and that time two Japanese is among the negotiation committee. They come around to Vancouver and talk to the company different, but still Japanese is a little lower than other people, white people.
This was right in the contract.
Mm-hmm. That's the way before the fighting, still before the
fighting. Well, how long did the union last, the capital workers last?
Oh, to the First World War, we were moved up or split up.
So the Second World War?
No, Second World War.
You split up at the second time, Second World War. And did your members then go into the other unions?
I guess not.
Of course, yeah.
Sure. They had no place to go to, really. And so that's when we came in after, in 40, when we started organizing in 45. I know when I traveled on organizing in 45 in the interior, I ran into all kinds of guys who were buddies of Dad in the 20s.
When did they break up the community here?
It was in 42.
Spring
of 42.
What happened between about 40 and 42?
40 and 42? Really, I don't think it was, well, when you say the war, I think Dad refers more specifically to after Japan got involved in the war in 41, because up to this point it was relatively the same.
And
Union stayed in existence, and it's, although I think it was starting to get smaller by then, wasn't it, Dad? Around 38, 39,
yeah,
it was pretty small then, wasn't it?
It
wasn't much of a force at all in the community, I don't think.
Why did it decline?
Why did it get smaller?
I don't know. See, that's I don't know how to tell that.
I suppose, looking back, I would imagine a part of the decline, this was because of the general depression that took place all over, that this was just a natural falling off which took place in many workers' groups during that period of time.
I don't know why the decline the members did.
It wasn't very big at the end, though, was
no,
it?
No.
And then the co-op store was pretty small.
Yeah,
by this
pretty
point.
Small, yeah.
Well, how big was it? How big was the union in its heyday?
Oh, how big? How many members?
Yeah,
each Hawaii took
you. Oh, I guess 1,000. I don't know exactly.
1,000.
Yeah.
That would be through the '20s, in the early '30s.
Yeah. Oh, I don't think enough to fight 1,000. Later, before the 1940s, pretty small, see. Yeah, membership is pretty small.
Did any of the community take part in the unemployed organizations?
No.
The province-wide ones?
Yeah.
I don't think the Japanese.
And the Japanese were excluded from the relief camps, weren't they?
I don't know. Were they dead? Did the Japanese go to the relief camps during the relief, during the Depression?
No.
They didn't go. Why do you guess they were excluded then?
Well, were the Japanese allowed relief?
Yeah. They got relief, didn't they?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, some of them would go to...
Did some go to the camps?
No.
None of the relief camps?
I guess not. I don't know myself, but I don't hear any people go to the camp.
I don't think there's any political overtones to much of this group, really, from a political point of view. I think they gravitated closely with the old CCF types because of the attitudes of the political parties in that region. Of course, there's enough material on this to show the attitudes of the liberals, particularly, even up until the wartime. Their general attitude, and so naturally enough, most of the Japanese were pretty close identified with people like Angus McGinnis.
Although Angus McGinnis was also one of the ones who resigned from the Canadian Labour Party over the issue of the enfranchisement.
Oh.
Although I think, I'm not sure why, actually. I think because he lost his... I think his statement was that he didn't represent the wishes of his constituents,
mm-hmm.
therefore he could not support it,
mm-hmm.
or something to this effect. But these people would associate with the OCCF on a personal basis,
mm-hmm.
rather than on a community group basis.
Yeah, a community group basis. Although the Japanese in the community who were, we'll say, who were not dyed-in-the-wool socialists at heart even, did support a lot of the CCF people because of the position they took on the question of franchise, naturally enough.
Mm.
And I'm sure they gathered quite a bit of money from Japanese community, from those who were not CCF inclined. Isn't that right, Dad?
Yeah.
Because now in this, you know, 1964.
Nobody remembers.
Nobody remembers this, you know. In fact, a lot of the young kids, if you find the expression coming out of university now, I've talked to, you know, I run into a little diehard liberals and conservatives now, and I always tell them, geez, your old man would turn over in his grave if he heard you talking now about the CCF, for example. But they sort of brush it off lightly by saying, well, this evolution was bound to happen, you know. It may or may not, and say it won't, but...
I took an ad from the Liberal campaign as Bolton J. S. Whispered.
Grant McNeil has a...
We had a famous sensation when
we
beat Princess last year in a magazine. Yeah. People just wouldn't believe it.
Yeah, people think that you dreamt this one. Yeah, I see it in Grant's office, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I just had a copy of the 1913 Liberal Party program given to me. Last plank and the white BC.
Yeah. I think this was probably more of the motivating factor of this group than anything else. The question of franchise plus to neutralize by becoming part of the Labour Council, the anti-Asiatic, the organized anti-Asiatic literature that they were pounding out.
Yeah, this unit is not like the white people's unions, a different idea, see. We can't do the any financial
They weren't set up really to deal in bargaining for collective agreements. This isn't what they were set up to do. They know this themselves. Because they would, their bargaining rights position was pretty weak anyway.
We want more right to join the Liberal Council, see.
It's more of a beneficial.
Yeah, I think so.
Did you have much contact with the other Japanese unions, the Stevenson fishermen?
Oh, they're quite. They are quite, they don't like the us, see. That means it's a fisherman union, the association union, their idea is, they don't like the us, see. They call us for common lakes, local people, groups, see. They don't like the, join us.
They're a much more high-level type of organization in the sense that they were more the Fishermen's Union in Steveston, so-called, was more of a protective association of small employers. This is what fishermen basically are. In fact, I even have some arguments today as to the status of the Fishermen's Union. Really, they're not...
Barbers. And the barbers.
Yeah, because really, they go under the name, but what do they negotiate for? Their price, but really they're small entrepreneurs who are banded together for their own mutual interest rather than workers who are working for an employer. While the Steveston Fishermen's Union was called such, the association was pretty far apart because one represented workers in a sense and the others represented the
small. After, you know, some time ago, that's... cut the fisherman raises for 40% off one time, I don't know what the
is. This is when the government restricted the, started to reduce the number of licensees that are Japanese ancestry.
They did that
after
the First World War.
Mm-hmm.
After a few years, their leaders think it's the union's ideas didn't go away, so they contacted them. Join us.
Oh. You did have some talks, eh?
Mm-hmm.
About joining
yeah.
together? Oh. But it didn't, nothing came about.
To talk to questions, I was going to ask you about employment. You came here as an immigrant yourself, did you?
Yeah.
Now, how did you go about finding a job?
When they come here, see that...
You have a job lined up?
Yeah, that's someone... See, when the immigrants come over here, see, that's some Japanese lodging house, like a rooming house. They find a job for us, see. And And all the millers have Japanese woman or boss like that. They give the job. So I start work in Hastings Summer. Right now in the color board for the office over there. That's Hastings Summer there.
Yeah. It's been suggested
that Japanese immigrants had an economic pressure brought to bear on them. That is, they had more difficulty in organizing because they owed money on their way. They had to pay back their way out. Is that so? Or that they were controlled one way or another?
Well, I think it was in the sense to that time was, as you said, they had the Japanese bosses under the Chinese system in the counter. It's much the same.
Yes.
And when the immigrants like that came, they stayed in the lodging or the boarding houses, and the guy would parcel the jobs out. His employer, the mill owner, would say, I need 10 guys, and he would go and get 10 guys. Some, I understand, were the boss himself, or the foreman himself, whatever you want to call him. He got paid by the company for so many heads or so much an hour, and then he would write checks on his own account to pay off the workers that he had under his control.
He doesn't work at all, see? And he contracts for a company.
You're the labor contractor, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this was prevalent and quite common right up into the Second World War. Hammond Cedar was the same way, Fraser Mills was the same way, all these places were this way. Now, I think after the company decided to get away from this practice, they still maintained the Japanese foreman. But jobs being what they were, and before Second World War, everybody made sure that at payday time or Christmas time, you suitably gave a present to your boss. If you didn't have any job next day. As simple as that. It was subtle as hell. I know of one that was out at Hammond Cedar. This guy ran a dairy farm. He never worked a tap on his farm. He got all free labor every evening and on the weekends from the guys who worked for him in the mill. Of course, there was no union in any event, whether you're a white worker or a Japanese worker.
The people who work under that kind of boss, they don't want to join the union. Stay out. If join the work morning, next day, no job.
Did you get any, when you formed the union, was there any pressure put on you?
Pressures from what source?
Well, from any source, not to form the union. I mean, was there opposition to your union?
I think that the thing that has to be recalled here is that many of the people who were involved in this Camp and Millworkers Union were not millworkers, in fact, themselves. Some of them, in fact, Umezuki, who was the secretary, who was now the Japanese editor, was what you and I would term a bit of an intellectual, who wasn't really a worker in that sense, but did lead the movement because he, and Dad was much in the same position. He actually became, while he was president of the union even, he was running a business of his own, although he was still connected with the Camp and Millworkers Union. And this is something I used to ask him about. How in hell did you become, or still remain, you know, involved with it while you were, in fact, a small businessman yourself? But you see, they didn't look at the union in the sense that I look at it today, or most of the people look at it as a vehicle to improve wages, hours, and working conditions. But to them, it was a vehicle in which to try and cut down the anti-Asiatic feeling, plus trying to get some equality in the political field, namely in the franchise question. I think this is the thing that it took me a long time to get this through my skull, and I talked to him, because when I went to work for the IWA, this was quite possible. So when I talked about it his time, it seemed so rather airy-fairy to me. But I think at the time, this was the only vehicle they could utilize to try and get some recognition. And so the worker-employer union relationship, as we know today, is altogether, wasn't there at all.
So it's quite different, the workers' union right here now, or white people, at that time Japanese, is quite different. Yeah. That's not like today's union.
Did in fact, though, did the Camp Mill workers take part or call any strikes?
No. I don't know that Alberta Mills, lumber mill, I don't know how to call, but no, I don't think we call that.
But they were involved, though.
Yeah,
they were involved in the strike at the Alberta Lumber Company.
Yeah.
Well, he can't recall whether there was some other group in there who called the strike and they went along with it.
Because there were, if I remember rightly, several strikes of Japanese workers at this time.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they are strikes or lockouts
mm-hmm.
or spontaneous type things, mm-hmm. you can't tell. But what I wanted to get at was, did they fulfill some of the bargaining functions?
But the strikes that the camp and mill workers had were to try and get some improvement, weren't they, Dad?
Yeah.
I suppose you and I would consider them as grievances today in this stage, but I guess there was no other method which they could use.
Well,
today.
Yeah, grievances were about responsible for 80% of the strikes in those days,
yeah. But it wasn't formally stumped for recognition of the union or recognition of agreements, I don't think. Because I think the history of labor agreements in those days in the lumber industry are pretty damn few and far between.
Unless it was oral,
yeah. Sylvie Barrett said that oral agreements aren't worth the paper they're written on.
Did the union, you say one of the objects of the union was to get the enfranchised and to break down. Did the union itself take part in any campaigns?
Political campaigns?
Well, political, not political party, but enfranchisement campaigns or political campaign in that sense, or equal rights campaigns, such as an equal
rights. I went the way through and just through Mr. McClure or Mr. McNeese, some people like that, yeah.
I don't think they came out openly as supporters. They came out, although certainly they supported financially, I know, people. But whether they came out in that, I think you have to, the Japanese immigrant philosophy at that time was not of radical mass groups. They were, while they do it now in Japan, I think at that time the people are pretty conservative in their approach and attitude, and were much, I think, worked more on the basis of cultivating people who they knew would be their friends and working to them on this basis, or gather to them people who would support them. Probably this is more correct, because it would be wrong to think that anybody got paid off along the way. Certainly there was not enough money involved at the time or anything.
There was no sort of mass movement in any way comparable to, say, with the American Civil Rights.
No, I don't think so. No, I don't think so.
Mm-hmm. So I heard from one fellow that there was a, he talked about one raid on they went and raided the Chinese section of town, and they carried out a very successful raid, and then started with the Japanese section.
Closed down, see? Or we stay home, but they didn't come back next day, next night.
Oh, you closed the mill down to meet them?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, but they didn't come?
No.
Oh, I see. No.
This night is, Chinese Chinatown and break all the store press.
Of course, this went
some stores, no break glass door, break everything. 1907, I think it's October, no, September, I guess September or August, I don't remember exactly the date.
I can recall that before the Second World War, at Halloween, the hooligans always used to go down to Chinatown and to Japanese town to try and wreck the place. This was common. And they used the guise of Halloween, I suppose we call them moms now, they used to go down and raise hell, loot, mostly to break the windows and loot.
Yeah.
But I know that they used to stay clear of the Japanese town after, because all the guys were...